Her comment isn't a surprise considering she's the bold, daring one of the group. She says what she wants, does what she wants, and damn the consequences. So far, this attitude has worked out fairly decently for her. You have nothing to lose. Keep seeing him. See if it goes anywhere. But what about Tiffany? I wrinkle my nose, make a disgusted face because, ugh, Tiffany. I do not want to deal with her. At all. If she makes an appearance or keeps harassing you guys, then end it with him. Tiffany stalking you guys all the time isn't worth it, you know? She could ruin the relationship before it even starts, Amelia explains. And if that's the case, then it wasn't meant to be. She makes it sound so very simple. And if I treat it right, it could be simple. Though I could see myself getting in over my head and falling for him quickly. I decide to reveal my biggest fear of all to them. You don't think I'm a rebound relationship for Alex? Maybe you are. Are you really going to let that hold you back? Stella shrugs. Maybe he's curious to see what could happen between you two after all these years. I think you're the one who got away in his eyes. You really think so? I hadn't thought of him in a while. When I was a teen, yes, I would think about him a lot. Think about that night. How bold and unexpected his initiating the kiss was. How I wish I knew what happened to him. But time marches on, memories fade, and you push those sorts of things into the back of your brain. At least that's what I did. Do you feel like he's the one who got away? Amelia asks. Sort of. I let my voice drift. At this very moment, I look at him like that, which is kind of ridiculous considering we didn't have an actual relationship back then. I was 12, almost 13, for the love of God. What did I know about relationships? All I wanted to do was kiss his perfect lips. That's kind of all I want to do now, too, is kiss those perfect lips. See if it's just as sweet all these years later as it was then. I probably built the moment up in my head to this idealized situation because we all want our first kiss to be a good one, right? I know for a fact that Stella's first kiss was an awkward peck at the movies, and they somehow bumped foreheads before he was able to sneak in there and actually touch her lips with his. She still cringes over that story, and since everyone at this table has heard it at one point or another, we all still cringe too. I'm with Stella, Eleanor says, her sweet voice breaking into my thoughts. You should go for it. We only live once, you know. I know. I enjoyed spending time with Alex. He's easy to talk to. He's way easy on the eyes. There's definite chemistry between us. I was so relieved he didn't try and kiss me when he dropped me off after dinner. But then again, I was disappointed. Let's take a vote, Sarah says, clearing her throat before she announces. All in favor of Caroline continuing to see Alex, please raise your hands. Everyone raises their hand, including myself, which makes them all laugh. It's unanimous, then, Eleanor says with a grin. You should keep seeing him. Perfect. Now let's hope he actually wants to continue seeing me. I say, the sarcasm in me strong. There's more laughter, and we move on to other subjects, such as Eleanor's lack of available men in her everyday life. Being a hairstylist who is also an excellent colorist, the majority of her clients are women. She has a few men who come in for a trim, but most of them are the husbands or fathers of her female clients. I'm tired of looking on dating sites, she says. They all either want to hook up for the night and that's it, or they're complete losers. We all nod in agreement. Been there, done that. Some of my older clients have sons my age, and they offer to set us up, but I don't know. What if I click with one, we date for a while, and then we break up? That client will end up hating me for life, Eleanor says. Yes, but what if that son is your future husband? Sarah asks, blinking innocently at Eleanor. You could miss the opportunity of a lifetime. True. Eleanor appears as if she's seriously considering this. Losing a client versus possibly finding your future husband? I say it's worth the risk. Sarah is Miss Romantic today for sure. And on it goes. Our food arrives and we stop counseling each other and moan and groan over how delicious our meals are instead. There's a slight breeze in the air, and birds are chirping in nearby trees. Colorful spring flowers are everywhere, in pots, hanging planters, in a small arrangement in the middle of our table. Traffic is light this morning in downtown Carmel, as it normally is on a Sunday, and as I absently look around, I notice the patio seems to be filled with mostly locals, some I even recognize and know. My gaze lands on one person in particular, and everything inside me curls up, withering like it wants to die. Tiffany. Panic zips through me, and I'm tempted to leap from the table and run screaming out of the restaurant, but I can't do that. Making a spectacle of myself is not the way to handle this. I'd only draw attention to myself, and that is the last thing I want to do. Anger replaces my panic. What the hell is she even doing here? This is my place. She's encroaching on my territory, and I don't like it. She's across the patio at a small table on the other side, sitting at an angle where she can't see me unless she looked behind her, but thank God I can clearly see her, meaning I can keep tabs on her. Grabbing Stella's wrist, I tug her close so I can whisper in her ear, "I need to go." Stella rears back, frowning at me. "Why?" I lean in to whisper again. "Tiffany's here, sitting on the other side of the patio."
"Oh, where?"
I indicate with a tilt of my head where she's at, hoping Tiffany doesn't notice me. Stella cranes her neck to check her out, yet somehow still manages to be stealthy about it.
"You're lucky we're sitting behind her," Stella says.
"She'll spot me eventually. She has a sixth sense when it comes to me." I glance in Tiffany's direction once again, finally noticing who she's sitting with. The same guy I saw her with in Alex's house that fateful afternoon. "I have to go. I don't want to make a big deal about this either."
"What do you mean?"
"I want to leave."
"No way."
Stella grabs me this time, her hand gentle on my arm. "Don't let her drive you out of here. Don't give her that power." "I don't want any drama, Stella. And that chick is chock full of it." I smile at her, patting her hand with my own. "I'll just slip out, okay? Tell the girls after I'm gone and we won't make a big deal about it. That way no one is screaming bye at me and catching Tiffany's attention. That is the very last thing I want to do."
"Fine." Stella rolls her eyes and ducks beneath the table, grabbing my purse for me. "Sneak out. The minute you're gone, I'll tell them what's up."
I take my bag from her. "I'll pay you back for breakfast when you get home."
"Don't worry about it."
Stella waves her hands and I rise to my feet, thankful they're all focused on Sarah, who's telling stories about her weird customers. None of them even notice when I leave. I'm exiting the restaurant, ready to head up Ocean Avenue, back to my apartment, when I hear someone call my name. Glancing over my shoulder, I spot O-M-G. Tiffany. Standing in front of the restaurant, her arms crossed, her stance downright hostile. Saying nothing, I face forward and pick up my pace, heading into a home goods store that's on the nearest corner of the street. I know most everyone who works there, and today the owner's daughter is standing behind the cash register, a pleasant smile on her face.
"Caroline, you look pretty this morning,"
Mary says in greeting.
"Hi."
"Thanks," I say weakly, skirting around a giant farm table laden with merchandise. I tuck myself into the corner on the left side of the giant window that faces the street, peeking outside so I can keep watch when Tiffany walks by. And thankfully, she does walk by within a couple of minutes of me hiding inside the store, oblivious as to where I'm at. She pauses at the open front doors, waiting for a second, and my heart trips over itself. It's hammering so hard. If she walks in here, she'll spot me, and I'll have nowhere to go. Someone was smiling down upon me today, because she keeps walking, crossing the street and disappearing from view.
"Are you okay?"
I turn to find Mary watching me, a frown marring her fine features.
"Seems like you're hiding out," she continues.
"I'm okay,"
I say, smiling brightly, too brightly. The relief that washes over me is heady stuff, and I swear I'm a little dizzy. I blink Mary into focus, my mind scrambling to come up with a reason when I slipped in here.
"Just, there was something I wanted to grab, but I can't find it."
The frown disappears, replaced by a helpful smile.
What exactly are you looking for?
That French soap you guys always carry, I want to get it for a Mother's Day present.
I wince the moment the lie falls from my lips. I only ever send my mom a card for Mother's Day every year. She definitely doesn't get a gift. The woman doesn't deserve one.
Oh, we just moved the soaps upstairs? Come on, I'll take you up.
I follow her, thankful for the distraction, annoyed with myself that I have to buy some useless yet expensive French soap, nervous that Tiffany actually came after me.
20. Alex. Sunday dinner at my parents' house usually plays out like this. My sister Meredith shows up earlier than scheduled with her husband Kevin and their 2-year-old twins, Hildy and Harry. Our younger brother James, who's 23, loves to play with them, and they love Uncle James because he will do whatever it takes to make them laugh. Whatever it takes. This usually means lots of loud noises chasing through the house and peekaboo games. My father grimly tolerates it. My mother exclaims a lot, "Watch out for this and that," always afraid something is going to get broken, which has happened once or twice. James is having the time of his life, as are the twins. Meredith uses the hours-long chaos to claim the children are exhausted and they need to go to bed early. This means they are out of the house by 6 o'clock at the latest. Dinner has barely been served. Sunday dinner is typically around 5. By the time Meredith and family are gone, James is also exhausted, and he retires to his bedroom, usually around 7, and that's pushing it. This means I'm the one who's left to chat up the parents by myself. In other words, it's a type of semi-hell that I suffer through maybe twice a month. Once, if I'm lucky. Tonight's dinner was no exception. The twins are especially loud. Hildy screaming with joy at the top of her lungs every time Uncle James scares her. Father has retreated to his study, where he claims to be working, but we all know he's avoiding us. Mother is supervising staff in the kitchen, otherwise known as hiding out and having a giant glass of wine to calm her frazzled nerves. Kevin couldn't make it to dinner since he's out of town. He also works for Wilder Corporation and is currently supervising a renovation in Beverly Hills, which spilled into the weekend, much to Meredith's irritation. My sister and I are in the sitting room enjoying a glass of wine while we wait for dinner. All Meredith wants to talk about is Tiffany and how she's so glad I broke it off with her. I'm tired of talking about Tiffany. I don't want to think about her anymore. It was a huge mistake I don't particularly care to revisit over and over again, so I try my best to reroute the conversation. How's it been this weekend without Kevin around? Kevin is Meredith's relief during the weekends. Having him around makes her feel less like a single mom, which is a common complaint she's had these last few months. Him not coming home Friday night was the last straw. I finally hired a live-in nanny, Meredith confesses. I tried my best to do this on my own, to only use the babysitter and no one else, but with Kevin not around much, it only got harder. So I did what I had to do. The children love her, and so do I. Good for you. Meredith takes everything upon her shoulders and rarely asks for help. It's one of her best and worst traits. So I'm guessing she works weekends. She does, and she's marvelous. You'll have to come over sometime and meet her. She's also young and attractive. Meredith laughs, but I don't. I have no interest in dating your nanny, I say bitterly. Her laughter dies. Oh, lighten up. I was just joking. Heaven forbid you get involved with the help. Now you make me sound like a classist asshole. Her being your nanny has nothing to do with it. I don't want to date anyone right now. Well, that's an outright lie. I am interested in Caroline, but I'm definitely not interested in dating someone who's linked to my family. If I dated the attractive nanny and then it didn't work out, where would that leave me? Screwed yet again. I'm tired of making shit choices when it comes to my personal relationships. This is a hard fact to face, but that's my reality. When it comes to women, I have terrible judgment. I'm either blinded by a pretty face or too distracted by work to give a woman the attention she craves. I'm still young. I firmly believe I don't necessarily have to find a woman to share my life with, But with Caroline in the picture, I'm rethinking everything. As much as I'm loath to admit it, Caroline has the potential to have that much power over me.
I'm still so relieved you ended it with Tiffany. I knew she wouldn't be faithful to you.
Meredith practically crows. How she could tell Tiffany had cheating potential, I'm not sure. But whatever.
Jesus, Meredith, can we please stop talking about her? It's over. Let's move on.
I tell my sister, sounding like the irritated older brother I am.
Gladly. I just can't help but throw in the I told you so. It's the know-it-all sister inside of me,
Meredith says with a little smile.
I ignore her, checking my phone for any texts. None from Caroline today.
Like, at all. I sent her a good morning text earlier, but she didn't reply. I sent her another one before I left for my parents' house, and still no response. Strange. Our father suddenly strides into the room, stopping in front of the couch where we're both seated.
Alex, it's imperative that you go to Paris right away.
I blink up at him, surprised by his belligerent tone. I plan on going to Paris in less than 3 weeks. We just discussed this trip only a few days ago, and now I don't have to go with Tiffany, thank God. Her not accompanying me probably saved me thousands of dollars.
You need to go over there now, this week. Another company is trying to make an offer on our building, and we can't let it get away.
He already thinks the building belongs to us, which is typical for my father. Once he makes a decision, it's done in his mind, and he's a man who doesn't like to lose. Neither do I. I'm weary, though, just thinking of rearranging my schedule so I can leave for Paris earlier than planned. Kelsey is going to have a fit when I tell her this. Not that she'd ever let me know her true feelings. She's the epitome of professionalism. Can't this all be discussed over the phone or via video conference? Modern technology is a beautiful thing, and we need to use it in situations like this.
No, that won't work. You need to be there in person. We're still only in negotiations, and the other corporation is trying to swoop in and steal our deal by offering them more money.
He runs his hand through his hair, appearing genuinely stressed out. And he's not one to let stress get to him. His confidence is what's gotten him and the Wilder Corporation so far.
We have to prove to them we're the better company. I want that building. It'll be the jewel in the Wilder Corporation's crown, the beginning of our growth in Europe.
We have no foothold in Europe. We're in negotiations for this particular building, and already scouting London to find a location there. Italy is next, then Spain. We have a 5-year European plan, and he'll be pissed if we screw it up with the first planned purchase. Exhaling loudly, I realize there's no point in me arguing. Looks like I'm going to Paris in a few days.
When do you want me to leave?
I'd say tomorrow, but I know that's impossible, what with your busy schedule.
His expression is grim.
Wednesday at the latest.
That is barely enough time for me to get my shit together. Can we bump it to Thursday?
If you leave Thursday, you won't even land in Paris until Friday, and by then it could be too late.
He shakes his head.
Wednesday has to work. Leaving Tuesday night would be even better.
I'll have my assistant look into flights, and I'll have her start working on pushing out my schedule. I start texting Kelsey, promising I'll pay her overtime for working on Sunday night.
Take the private jet, he offers.
We use it sparingly. We try our best to be a green company. But we purchased the jet years ago, and when it's needed, it comes in handy. I can't deny it.
No one else is using it?
I'm surprised.
Your brother-in-law tried to use it yesterday to come home, but I told him no.
Daddy!
Meredith is clearly outraged. I wonder if Kevin even mentioned he tried to use it to come home.
You should have let him!
It's too expensive for a less than an hour trip. Your husband can stay where he's at.
His voice is firm. I can practically feel the anger shimmering off Meredith as she sits beside me. But our father doesn't even notice, which is typical. His focus is now redirected at me.
You know, it's a damn shame you broke off that engagement of yours.
I glance up at him, mouth open in surprise.
What are you saying? That you liked Tiffany?
He grunts.
I didn't like her at all.
Hey, thanks for the vote of confidence in my choices, Dad.
But you being engaged looks good to the Deschaux. They have strong family values.
We do too, so I'm sure that won't be a problem. We are, after all, a family-run business, I remind him.
So are they, and you appeared solid in their eyes, what with your recent engagement. They even mentioned it to me during one of our discussions. Now that the engagement is off, you might appear unstable.
Meredith snorts, thankful his attention is off her, no doubt. At my father's irritated glare, she presses her fingers against her mouth.
This isn't funny, Meredith. We could be in serious trouble, he tells her.
With a sigh, Meredith rises to her feet.
I need to go check on the children.
With that, she's gone. I'm glad. This is a discussion I don't want to have in front of my sister. Remaining with that woman would have made me completely unstable. So it's a good thing we split, I explain. She would have ruined me. She could have ruined the business's image at the very least. Having her out of my life isn't a bad thing, I promise.
Oh, I understand, and I completely agree with your assessment. It's just that we need a quick fix to maintain your shining prince image. Perhaps you need a pretend fiancé to accompany you to Paris and meet the Deschaux family.
A pretend fiancé? Are you serious? Has he been sitting in his office, plotting this idea to present to me? Most likely. I seriously can't believe he would suggest such a thing. He doesn't so much as blink when he says,
Yes, I'm serious.
What do you want me to do, hire out my assistant, have her take on the role of loving fiancé? The hopeful expression on his face cannot be denied.
Do you think she'd do it for the right price?
What the hell, are you insane? I rise to my feet, throw my hands up in the air, then start pacing the room. I'm not bringing Kelsey to Paris so we can pretend we're engaged to impress these people. That's insane. Something out of a movie. One of those ridiculous romantic comedies my sister always used to torture me with when we were kids and she'd get control of the TV remote. Hell, I don't even watch TV anymore, or go to the movies. I don't have time.
It's just a little white lie, only for a few days while you entertain the Deschaux and convince them the Wilder Corporation is the right company to carry on their legacy.
You should go to Paris. I pause in my pacing and jab my finger at him. Take Mother. Show them what a family man you are.
I can't go. Too much going on here. Plus, they want to meet the future of the Wilder Corporation, and that's you.
He exhales loudly, and I know this is bothering him, the possible loss of this deal. He wouldn't make such an outrageous suggestion if he weren't worried. He will do whatever it takes to win something, even if that means forcing me to find a fake fiancé. Apparently so.
Think about asking your assistant to accompany you. We pay her top dollar. She'd be the perfect candidate. Discreet. Professional. And she's an attractive woman, Alex. You would make an excellent-looking couple.
I say nothing. It's like I lost my capability to speak, and my father has lost his damn mind. There is no way I'm asking Kelsey to come with me to Paris and pretend to be my fiancé. There's absolutely no way. An idea flashes in my brain, too crazy to contemplate. Or is it? I could ask Caroline. Would she be interested? A free trip to Paris would be alluring to anyone, but she's also a working woman. She'd have to ask for days off and little more than 48 hours' time. Could she do it? The real question is, does she want to do it? There's only one way for me to find out.
21. Caroline. I've successfully avoided Alex all day long. Every text he sends me, I don't respond. Toward the late afternoon, though, his texts suddenly became more frequent, and somehow more frantic.
Please, Caroline, I need to talk to you. Call me as soon as you receive this text.
I don't. So he calls me, but I don't answer. He leaves voicemails, two of them, but I don't listen. I'm too scared. He'll convince me everything's all right. I have nothing to worry about, and I'll end up seeing him again, which means I'm bound to see Tiffany again soon, something I don't want to risk.
Why does your phone keep blowing up? Stella asks.
We're hanging out in our tiny living room watching Game of Thrones. At least, I'm trying my best to watch GOT, but a certain someone keeps distracting me. It's nothing, I tell Stella. She pauses the show mid-Jon Snow monologue.
Tell me.
Stella, I swear, it's nothing. Now let's finish this.
I have to be able to talk all things Game of Thrones tomorrow morning at work. Iris and I spend at least 10 to 15 minutes on the topic first thing Monday morning. The phone dings again, and Stella raises a brow. Just tell me who it is. Fine, I sigh, wishing I could throw my phone across the room, but it's worth way too much money, so I don't. It's Alex, but I'm not answering him.
And you're not answering him because...
Because freaking Tiffany the Psycho followed me out of the restaurant this morning, remember? How could she even forget? Are you really going to let that bitch ruin your chance at a potential relationship with Alexander Wilder? She sounds incredulous. But guess what? I'm incredulous too. She threatened me the last time she came to Noteworthy, Stell. She's chasing after me this morning when all I'm trying to do is have a nice brunch with my friends. I had to hide out in a store so she wouldn't see me. I pause, hoping those words sink in. That's crazy. The look on Stella's face is nothing short of disgusted.
You should have called the cops on her.
What, so I can make her even more furious and then she's really coming for me? I don't want to risk it. My life is mostly no drama. I'm pretty laid back, and I've been told more than once by good friends that I put up with a lot of shit. Tiffany Ratcliffe has me running scared. The wrath of a scorned woman is no joke.
You'd rather shut Alex out of your life forever and miss the chance you two could have had? Stella shakes her head. Pitiful.
I really hate it when you say things like that, I tell her grumpily, staring at Jon Snow's perfectly handsome, perfectly distraught face. The poor man. I am so going to miss this show when it's gone.
I say things like that to make you really think about what you're doing, Stella explains.
Like I told you earlier, don't let this woman control your decisions. Don't let her take over your life. She's not taking over my life. She's reminding me that she's still angry. Why would I want to provoke her by seeing Alex?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe because you like him? Stella rolls her eyes. There's a concept to consider.
You're being rude, I say, my voice small. And you're being ridiculous. I'm going to say it yet again. Don't let this woman drive you away from Alex. He sounds like a good guy. He might not have made the best choice in a fiancé, but at least he didn't marry her. And that's all thanks to you.
Look, everyone makes mistakes. He's not perfect, and neither are you. Maybe you could be the one to fix him.
I don't want to fix anybody,
I tell her. Stella waves a hand. You know what I mean.
I think of me calling myself the fixer. And maybe that's a legit thing. Since I had such a crappy home life when I was a kid, I'm constantly trying to fix things and make them prettier, better, perfect. I fix people's weddings, fix my friend's relationship problems, fix Alex after he was deceived by the woman he was going to marry. Is that what I am to everyone? I ask Stella, who's giving me an odd look. I know I'm bringing this out of nowhere, but I can't help it. Am I really the fixer? She sets the DVR remote on the arm of the couch and focuses all of her attention on me. You're attracted to men who have minor, and every once in a while major, problems, and I think you look at them as projects. I mentally go over the men I've dated, mostly the ones who I became serious with, and, oh my God, she's right. I wanted to fix all of them. There was the one who could never keep a job. I offered to rewrite his resume. I tried to find him actual jobs, always believing in him, always loyal. Too loyal. There was that other guy, a long time ago, who was the lead singer in a band and desperately wanted a record deal. I campaigned hard for him. I wrote fan letters to record companies trying to get them noticed. The problem was, the band sucked. Bad. And I knew it. He could barely carry a tune. He was also extremely lazy. Like, he didn't want to work. Ever. Dude, I was such an idiot. A 19-year-old idiot, meaning I can blame it on youth, but still. I don't think I look at Alex as a project, I admit softly.
You want to fix him after he just got dumped by his fiancé, right? At least, that's what it looks like to me.
Ugh, I hate this about myself. This is a terrible trait to have. No, it's actually a good trait if you pick the right men, Stella starts to say, but I cut her off. It's awful. I shouldn't let myself get carried away with wanting to fix them. I should accept them as who they are, and that's it.
Is that what you're going to do with Alex? Accept him for who he is?
Absolutely not. I'm not going to attempt anything with him. I'd rather not be scared every time I go outside, thank you very much. A shudder moves through me at the thought of Tiffany figuring out where we live.
You want me to be honest? I think she's going to seek you out wherever she can, whether you continue to see Alex or not. Right now, she doesn't even know about you and Alex going to dinner, Stella says.
You can't be too sure.
I'm fairly sure. She would have totally lost her shit on you earlier if she did know.
Stella scoots closer to me on the couch, so our knees bump. What I'm trying to say is, you can either be miserable and alone, with Tiffany still following you around town, or you can start seeing Alex. Tiffany can try to harass you, but with Alex on your side, eventually she'll back down. It's your choice. I say nothing, and Stella doesn't push, thank goodness. Her explanation sort of makes sense. Seeing Tiffany this morning at the restaurant freaked me out, and when she followed after me, I panicked. Can anyone blame me for wanting to cut ties with Alex, considering his ex-fiance believes I'm the cause for their breakup? At least that's how she acts. It's as if she can't even see how she's the one who destroyed their relationship, not me. Stella hits play and we resume watching GOT, but my mind is elsewhere. I can't stop thinking about Alex and how urgent his texts seem. I'm guessing his voicemails are the same, but I don't want to listen to them now. With Game of Thrones on and Stella still in the room, I'd rather listen to them somewhere private. I'll check them when the show is over. We've got a few minutes left of GOT when I swear I hear my name called. Then I hear it again. And again. Stella hits pause. Is someone yelling for you outside? I nod, gathering up the blanket I have draped over me and holding it close to my chest like it's going to protect me. What if it's Tiffany? Do you think she knows where we live?
Unless she sounds like a dude, I'm gonna guess it's not Tiffany.
Stella gets up and goes to the open window that faces the street. With the weather being so nice and our apartment on the second floor, we feel safe leaving the window open, even when we sleep. She peers out the window for a moment, then turns to face me with a faint smile.
You're never going to believe this.
It's Tiffany, huh? She brought her stupid new boy toy to yell for me? I refuse to move from the couch. No way do I want her to see me.
It's not Tiffany, silly. It's freaking Alex Wilder.
What? I climb off the couch and rush to the window where I see Alex standing on the sidewalk, staring up at us. When his gaze lands on me, the relief on his face is obvious.
Caroline, did you get my messages?
He yells.
Stop yelling! I tell him, but he doesn't listen to me. Thank God there aren't very many people around.
I need to talk to you, he yells. Please?
Stella and I face each other.
Let him come up here, she says, and I frantically shake my head.
That goes against our usual rules, I remind her. The fact that Alex even knows where I live is major. We don't usually give that information out on the first date. But I thought of him as an exception since I knew him when we were kids.
Rules, schmools. The poor man actually came out here and repeatedly shouted your name, desperate to talk to you. Give the guy a chance, Stella says.
Pulling my phone out of my yoga pants pocket, I call Alex. He answers the phone quickly, and before he can say a word, I tell him, go into the alley to the left of the building as you're facing it. There's a stairway, so head up it and you'll be at our door.
Thank you. I'm heading up,
he says before he ends the call. We move away from the window and I start moving, picking up around our tiny living room. We're not total slobs, but there's an empty pizza box on the coffee table and some empty soda cans, too. I shove it all into Stella's open arms and she takes everything to the kitchen to throw it away while I'm folding blankets and plumping flat pillows. If he'd come only a few minutes later, we'd have finished this. Stella gestures at the television screen, the mother of dragons staring down upon us with a haughty look. I love her so much. She is such a badass. We'll watch it after he leaves. Stella laughs and rolls her eyes.
Yeah, right. I have a feeling he might not leave.
Seriously?
You think I'm going to invite him to stay? I don't think so. I haven't even kissed him yet.
Sure you have, when you were 12.
She grins, and I threaten to throw a pillow at her smug face. There's a knock on the door, and I give Stella a gentle shove, watching as she walks down the short hall and slinks into her room, shutting the door quietly. Once I know she's hidden away, I go to the front door, turn the locks, and open it to find Alex standing there, looking stressed the hell out, yet somehow still completely gorgeous.
Can I come in?
His voice is low, his tone terse, and I nod without saying anything, my voice seeming to have left me. Once I shut and lock the door, I turn and face him, drinking him in. He's wearing jeans and a thin black sweater, the sleeves pushed up to reveal his sexy forearms. I know, I never really thought of them as sexy before either. His dark hair is a mess, like he's just run his fingers through it again and again, and his jaw is set in such a firm line. I think it might be able to cut glass. That's a total exaggeration, but still, you get what I'm trying to say.
Have you been avoiding me?
He asks when I still haven't said anything. Kind of? I phrase it as a question, feeling extra bad for doing exactly that and having him now standing in front of me. It's hard to admit to someone that you've been ignoring them. He appears surprised, and I guess I can't blame him. We left things on a positive note Friday night.
Why? I thought we had a good time at dinner.
We did, I swear, it's just... I don't know how to explain this without being blunt. Tiffany is still bothering me. His expression goes from irritated to full-on angry.
What do you mean? How is she still bothering you?
I went to brunch with my friends this morning, and she just so happened to be at the same restaurant. Once I realized she was there, I decided I should leave so she wouldn't see me. But when I walked outside, it turned out she actually followed me. And she continued to follow me until I hid in a store. Luckily enough, she didn't see me go in and kept on walking.
Fucking unbelievable.
He mutters, driving his fingers through his hair.
Did you call the police?
No, of course not. Following me down a city street isn't a crime. I say, frustration filling me. This entire situation is so weird. My life was downright boring before Alex walked back into it. Sometimes, like earlier this morning when I was hiding in the store, I miss those boring days. They were good times. No real stress beyond the occasional bridezilla at work, and that was it.
I don't understand how Tiffany following you has anything to do with you avoiding me,
he says. Is he freaking clueless? The only reason she's following me is because of you, I remind him. Before you walked into my life, I was fine. Now here you are with your crazy ex, and she's scaring me, Alex. Creating chaos everywhere she goes, especially for me. I jab my thumb into my chest to make my point.
You're holding Tiffany's actions against me?
His mouth thins into a grim line.
I can't control her, Caroline. I don't even talk to her anymore.
I know, I say weakly.
I wish I could stop her from following you and harassing you. I'm sorry if she's making your life miserable. I'd tell her to leave you alone, but she won't listen to me. I'm pretty certain if I went to talk to her right now, that would only spur her on to chase after you even more. She's that spiteful of a person, trust me.
He says. He's right. I'm sure he's right. I wish I could just escape from here, even for just a few days. I admit. My tone wistful.
I could probably make that happen.
His smile is tight.
I have a problem that I'm hoping you could help me with.
Somehow those two sentences don't necessarily belong together. What's wrong? Without thought, I reach out and touch one of those sexy forearms. His skin is warm, his arm hard. For a guy who's such a workaholic, I get the sense that he's pretty muscular underneath that sweater and those jeans. Whoops, there go my cheeks. I can feel them catching fire.
Promise you won't freak out when I ask you a question?
He raises his brows as he waits for my answer. My heart leaps into my throat and I nod, offering a croaky. I promise. He exhales loudly,
reaches for my hand still resting on his arm and places his big hand over it, holding me there. His gaze is locked on mine as he says,
"Want to go to Paris with me in 2 days and pretend to be my fiancé?"
I blink at him once, twice, 3 times before I manage to say, "Come again?" Another ragged exhale leaves him while he squeezes my hand.
"We're trying to acquire an old hotel in Paris, and we're in the midst of negotiations, though we were confident it was already ours. Now, my father's not so confident. There's another company trying to outbid us, and my father asked me to go to Paris to talk to the original owners so we can seal this deal. And he wants my fiancé to go with me."
He knows you and Tiffany broke it off, right?
"Yes, he knows. But he's also disappointed that we broke it off. Not because he loves Tiffany, more so for the image of me being a man who's about to get married and start a family."
I shake my head. "I don't understand."
"Let me explain."
We go sit on the couch and he launches into his story. "The Deschaux family owns a crumbling hotel building Wilder Corporation is desperate to acquire. They were a family-run business nostalgic for the old days when the father and his sons ran their 3 hotels in Paris. Times have changed. One of the sons passed unexpectedly. There were some mismanaged funds and business tanked. All of the hotels were eventually closed. One building has already been sold, and one of them is in a highly prized location."
"It's right across from the Louvre, down the street from the Ritz and the Place Vendôme. High-end shopping, high-end restaurants mixed with touristy spots. It's an ideal location, and we want it. It would be the perfect start for the first Wilder hotel in Europe," Alex says.
"That sounds amazing." I pause. "I still don't quite understand why you would need a fiancé when you meet with these people, though."
"My father thinks it'll be just the advantage we need to lock in this deal. Portraying us as a family-run business ready to create more generations is the message he wants to send,"
Alex says, his expression vaguely uncomfortable. His words, of course, make me think of us working on creating that next generation. In case you don't get where I'm coming from, I'm imagining having sex with Alex. My cheeks are still hot. No surprise. "So, he wants the picture-perfect fiancé by your side? The adoring future wife?" I say, hoping I'm on the right track.
"That's exactly what he wants."
Alex nods.
"I know you have a full-time job at Noteworthy. I'm guessing it'll probably be difficult for you to get the time off."
"The schedule is already out for this week. I have Friday off, unusual, and back-to-back-to-back appointments on Saturday. Wedding fever is kicking in."
"How easygoing is your boss?"
"Iris is pretty wonderful. But is she so wonderful that she'll give me a week off at the last minute so I can go to freaking Paris? Maybe."
"I guess the question I need to ask is, do you want to come to Paris with me?"
I stare into his eyes, noting how hopeful his expression is, how much he's reminding me of early teenage Alex right now. I would have done pretty much anything for that boy back then. Those old feelings come rushing back, filling me with longing, and I say without thinking, "Yes, I'll go to Paris with you." 22. It was surprisingly easy to get a week off. I'd gone to work Monday morning, terrified Iris would tell me no. She knew something was up when we had our weekly GOT discussion, and I didn't have much to add to the conversation. When she finally asked me what was wrong, I told her I was hoping I could take some vacation time starting Wednesday, then promptly burst into tears. After my tears dried up, and I told her I was going to Paris, she reassured me that leaving for a week wouldn't be a problem. Since starting at Noteworthy, I've rarely took a big chunk of vacation time. More like, I'll take a couple days off here and there, and though my request was so last minute, she reassured me she was up to the challenge. She'll handle my appointments for me. Plus, she recently hired another part-time employee, so she'll have that new person work more hours while I'm gone. I didn't let her know the entire reason for going to France, pretending to be Alex's fiancé. I merely told her a last-minute opportunity had come up with a friend, and I'd hoped to go as long as I could get time off. Iris was more than understanding and actually quite excited for me to travel to Paris. Lucky for me, I already have a passport, since I've gone on a few girls' trips over the years to all-inclusive resorts in Mexico. I worked Monday, did my laundry, and started packing that night, worked a 6-hour shift Tuesday, and by the time I got home, Alex was waiting at my apartment.
"We're going to take a charter plane to Los Angeles,"
he explains once we're on the road and headed for the airport.
"And from there, we'll fly private to Paris."
My mouth pops open. "We're flying on a private plane to France?" He nods, a little smile curling his mouth.
"It was such a last-minute trip, my father felt it would be best. He wants us there as soon as possible."
"Okay, I feel like a baller. Seriously, a private jet?" My baller mood slips when we get to the Monterey Regional Airport and I see the little plane we're supposed to take to Los Angeles. "We're flying on that?" I pause, pointing at the plane we're walking toward. "How many seats are in there?"
"It's just us and the pilot. We'll be fine."
Alex offers me a reassuring smile, but come on, that plane is tiny! My knees are knocking. I watch as two men start loading our luggage into the plane while we wait for the pilot to finish flight checks. We're on the tarmac, the wind whipping around furiously, planes roaring by us, and I'm freaking the hell out!
"You okay?"
Alex steps closer to me, his voice low. I shake my head. "Not really."
"Don't like to fly?"
He slips his arm around my shoulders and pulls me to him, giving me a squeeze. "Not on planes that small." I feel a little better with Alex's arm around me. Okay, I feel a lot better. He's so solid and warm, and he makes me feel safe. Though, the safe feeling leaves me when we board the plane. There are only 6 seats, and I practically fall into one of them, slipping on my seatbelt with shaky fingers. I should have brought some Xanax. Stella offered me a few. She's a nervous flyer, and she has a prescription. But I told her I would be fine. Well, right now, I'm not feeling so fine. At all.
"Want a drink?"
Alex asks once he's seated next to me. I shake my head and grip the armrests. The plane engine isn't even on yet, and I'm already tense.
"I have booze."
I swallow, hating how dry my throat is. "What kind of booze?"
"Vodka, ice, cranberry juice."
He points toward the smallest bar ever, and relief makes me slump in my seat. "I'll take a vodka cranberry, please. Heavy on the vodka and ice." Chuckling, Alex makes me a drink and then hands it over. I take it eagerly, draining most of it in one swallow, and he watches me with amusement dancing in his eyes.
"You're kind of a wreck."
"Tell me all about it." I rattle the ice in my plastic cup and drink some more. "Listen, I'm not one to drink alcohol on a constant basis. In my early 20s, I liked to party, I won't lie. Now, I enjoy a glass of wine in the evening, but not every evening, and mimosas during Sunday brunch make the meal a much better experience. Today, though, I'm feeling the need for liquor, and lots of it." I can already feel the vodka working its magic as it slips through my veins. Without having to ask, Alex pours a little more in my cup, along with a splash of cranberry juice to give it some color. The vodka is cold and sharp, and my throat is burning, but I can already tell I'm mellowing out. By the time we're starting down the runway, I'm downright relaxed. No more gripping the armrests for me. My shoulders are loose. I'm sharing my current favorite memes with Alex on my phone. His suggestion, he's a smart one, looking to distract me. We keep our heads bent together as we both laugh at the silly videos and captions. Once we're in the air, there are only a few bumps and some very minor turbulence before we get to flying altitude.
"Not so bad, right?"
Alex flashes me a smile, his voice raised so I can hear him over the loud propellers. "Not so bad," I agree, finishing off my second very full glass of vodka. "Hope I don't have to pee anytime soon." "Damn it, I can't believe I just said that. Stupid vodka." He laughs.
"We won't be up here in the air for too long. This is a quick flight, like not even an hour."
"What time do we fly out for Paris?"
"The plane is scheduled to depart at 7, but depending on the pilot's arrival and how soon the plane is ready, we could possibly leave earlier. I know that would please my father. The quicker we're in Paris, the happier he'll be.
The grim look on Alex's handsome face tells me he's under enormous pressure to finalize this deal. He's given me a few more details in regards to us meeting with the Deschaux family, but not much. I'm starting to wonder if he's going into this as blind as I am.
How long is the flight to Paris? I ask.
Around 11 hours, give or take.
I must make a face of horror or despair, I'm not sure which, but I'm feeling both emotions. That is a long time, the longest flight I've ever taken, and Alex immediately tries to reassure me.
It won't be so bad on the private jet,
he says with a slight smile.
It will be a very comfortable flight.
If you say so.
I imagine the plane has to be bigger than this one in order for us to fly international.
When I was in high school, we flew private all the time,
Alex says, and I lean in closer, thrilled to be given a glimpse into Alex's past.
My father was busy growing the business, and a lot of the time, we traveled with him.
That must have been fun, I say.
It was, though sometimes it was really stressful. Did you know my younger brother is autistic?
When I nod, he continues.
He didn't travel well. Still doesn't. He prefers his routine, the things that are familiar to him. Despite the fact that our family owned a hotel chain, James absolutely hates staying in a hotel room. You think he'd grow used to it after all these years, but he still doesn't like it. He rarely travels.
How old is he?
23.
Alex smiles and there's a fondness, a warmth in his expression I don't normally see. I can tell he really cares about his brother.
He's a lot of fun. Very smart. He works for the company, too.
He does?
Yeah, he's in the accounting department. He's scary good with numbers. Our father didn't want him to work for the company at all at first. He was afraid James wouldn't be able to focus for 8 hours a day. So he relented and had him work part-time hours at first. He wasn't in the accounting department starting out either, but our sister Meredith caught him in there one day, poring over our quarterly statement and finding mistakes.
Alex chuckles.
He was right about those mistakes, too. So Meredith switched James's position, eventually gave him full-time hours, and he's worked there ever since.
That's amazing, I say. Did James go to college?
No, but he probably should. He's freaking brilliant.
So why did you stop flying private?
I ask, curious to get back to the original topic.
Oh, my father found out our carbon footprint was terrible, and the biggest contributor was the private jet. So he sometimes leases it out to other companies we work with, but for the most part, it's rarely in use. The Wilder Corporation does its best to maintain itself as a green company,
Alex explains. I'm fascinated by his stories. At the inner workings of his family's company, what he does, what his entire family does, is such a huge responsibility, one I'm fairly sure I couldn't maintain no matter how hard I tried. I balk at the idea of Iris wanting me to take over Noteworthy, and that's just one store. I can't imagine running such a large corporation, being responsible for so many employees. It all sounds like a lot. Too much, if I'm being honest. Yet Alex does it as if it's his birthright, and I suppose it is. As the oldest son, I'm sure there are expectations thrust upon him that he can't avoid as the oldest son. The pressure must be enormous. No wonder he doesn't have much time for a relationship. I can almost forgive him for choosing Tiffany as his future wife. Almost.
Okay, I didn't think the plane was going to be this badass.
This is the first thing I say upon seeing the Wilder private jet. It's amazing. There are oversized leather chairs, a freaking couch, a giant TV mounted on the wall, and there's even a small dining table set for eight, right next to the mother truck and kitchen.
You like it?
Alex sounds amused. I think I've consistently amused him since we left my apartment. I'm acting like a total travel noob, but come on. I've never traveled like this before. I would say the majority of people in this entire world haven't traveled like this before either. It's kind of awesome.
I love it,
I tell him as I wander to the back of the plane. There's a bedroom back there, two of them, and a decent-sized bathroom.
Oh my gosh, can we sleep in a bed back here? Get out!
I told you we would be flying comfortably.
Alex reminds me. An understatement for sure.
Wow.
I stop talking when I spot a woman standing just behind Alex, clad in a black skirt suit and a crisp white shirt.
Good evening, Mr. Wilder. Ms. Abbott, welcome to tonight's flight. My name is Heather, and I'll be your personal attendant for the duration of your trip to Paris. I do hope you've found the accommodations to your liking so far.
Everything is perfect, Heather. Thank you.
Alex says, the epitome of professionalism. I could learn a thing or two from him instead of blurting out the word badass when describing this plane. There is meal service on this flight, both a late dinner and breakfast about an hour before we land. Heather smiles, revealing perfect straight white teeth. Would you care for anything to drink as we prepare for takeoff? Alex sends me a look before answering for the both of us.
Water will be fine for both of us for now. Thank you.
Heather nods and leaves us, heading to the kitchen at the front of the plane.
I didn't think you wanted any more alcohol this evening,
Alex says to me after she's gone. You're right. I'm feeling way too relaxed. My head is even a little spinny. I probably need to eat something soon. Do you think Heather has any snacks? I probably drank too much vodka on an empty stomach.
Absolutely. I'll go ask her for something to snack on right now.
Alex leaves me to go speak with Heather. And the moment I'm alone, I whip out my phone and start taking photos. I have to share this plane with my girls. I open up the group chat we have and send the photos. The responses are immediate.
That's what you're flying on?
Rich bitch!
So jelly. When I send a photo of the bedroom with a full-size bed, they all lose their shit. Lots of emojis and gifs, and the best response from Stella.
Are you going to have sex with him on that bed? You ho.
I immediately text back.
Of course I'm not having sex with him on that bed. I'm a lady.
Then I send my most used emoji, the crying, laughing one. More funny gifs and emojis come at me in response. I seriously love my friends so much. Once I've finished texting, I walk out of the bedroom to find Alex sitting in one of the comfy-looking chairs waiting for me. There's an identical chair that faces his, with a small table in between. There are two glasses of ice water on the table, as well as a tray filled with an array of yummy snacks. My stomach growls as I sit in the chair and grab the glass closest to me, taking a sip of water before I reach for a handful of nuts from a small cup. They're warm, I tell Alex before popping them in my mouth.
That's first-class treatment right there,
he says. I've never flown first class before, so I wouldn't know. I'm hit with how my lifestyle is completely different from his. As a kid, we didn't have much. A nurse's assistant salary doesn't go too far when our mom is supporting herself and two kids. We scraped by. As soon as Carter was old enough, he got a job. Same with me. Plus, I took babysitting jobs before that. Any and all money I earned went to my necessities. Clothes and shoes and stuff like that. I've been taking care of myself for years, and same with my brother. Alex has no idea what it's like to live like that. Yes, he has responsibility and has to help run a corporation, but those things were handed to him. Nothing has ever been handed to me.
Caroline, I want to thank you again for doing this for me,
Alex says, his gaze meeting mine when I glance up.
I know this week won't be easy, having to pretend we're together for the sake of the Deschaux family. And for my family's future. I'll owe you a lot when this trip is finished. I don't know how I'll ever repay you.
His words, the expression on his face, are heartbreakingly sincere. It's okay, I smile. You're taking me to Paris. I think that's payment enough.
I'm taking you to Paris and forcing you to play a part in something that's not real.
His gaze drops from mine for a moment as he hangs his head. Almost as if he's ashamed?
I'm asking you to lie for me, and that's not really fair.
Heather comes over the intercom and asks us to buckle our seatbelts as the plane is preparing to depart. Once we're buckled in, I decide to ask some questions. Questions I probably should have asked a few days ago when he first proposed this idea, but oh well. I guess I got a little too excited.
What exactly are we doing while we're in Paris?
I'll be in meetings, mostly. I'll need you with me during the evening when we'll be entertaining with the Deschaux. Dinner's out, I'm thinking. Probably nothing more.
He pauses, his expression telling me he's going to say something that might make me uncomfortable.
You need to be extra attentive and act as if you like me.
Please, that won't be difficult.
I don't think I told you, but we're staying at the Ritz. I want to scope out the competition while we're there, and they're the best of the best. We'll have a suite with separate beds, of course.
Of course. I say with a quick nod, my hands gripping the chair's armrests when I feel the plane swing around. I guess we're taking off.
You still a little anxious?
Not too bad. The alcohol has taken the edge off. I smile, but it feels a little shaky, so I let it fall. Instead, I reach for a slice of cheese and nibble on it. I hope Heather serves dinner soon.
Once we're at flying altitude, she'll feed us.
His gaze is intense as he watches me, and it's like I'm on display. I try to relax my grip on the armrests as best as possible, but I'm not a fan of taking off. I never have been. At least the seats are comfortable.
Are you sure you're going to be okay with this?
Okay with what? The flight? A little too late to ask now, I tease.
No, I mean all of this, our trip and what I need you to do. You might end up spending a